everybody, and welcome to this Newspaper Death Watch audio interview. This one is with Ken Doctor, a veteran newspaper man, a digital pioneer with Knight Ridder for many years, starting up some of their new digital efforts, and currently an analyst at Outsell and an advisor to many newspapers and newspaper executives. He has a wonderful blog called Content Bridges that I recommend everyone read, and he has some prescriptions for the industry. Ken is not a dour, down-and-out guy. He's a guy who sees a lot of potential in the current downturn. As we begin to come out of this downturn, the potential to reinvent news organizations. And in this audio interview, roughly 32 minutes in length, he'll describe some of the opportunity he sees, as well as some of the opportunities that have been missed. So we hope you'll listen, we hope you'll comment, and we'd love to hear your suggestions for other industry experts we can interview on Newspaper Death Watch. My name's Paul Gillen. I was prompted to contact you because of a piece that you wrote recently about the stabilization of earnings, or at least things don't seem to be getting bad, worse as quickly as they were before, and possibly some light at the end of the tunnel, the ability for publishers to begin to make some kind of strategic plans instead of just stopping the hemorrhaging. And I remember that you had said that back in April.
I appreciate you pointing that out. Yeah, I remember you pointed that out in your piece, and I'd forgotten I'd said that.
Well, it's true. You did say that. I remembered that clearly, and that we were going to have a respite here, and that appears to be happening. So the question is, what can publishers do? What should they be doing now to take advantage of this brief interruption?
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's a bit of a respite. It is a reprieve. This is really a reprieve that they're getting. And it's not any kind of return to the old system. Simply, the bad news seems to be spent. All the controversy, are we at the bottom of a U recession? Nobody knows. But if you look at those revenue numbers, the revenue numbers were only a little bit better. So they were down 24% in some categories, you know, compared to 27%. So this is not any kind of major return. I think what publishers need to do, and I pointed to it in that recent post, they really need to say, okay, we've got a small gift here of time where things aren't going to continue to get worse and worse. So we've got to really focus on transforming our businesses even more quickly. And in general, if I had to pick one word, I would say metrics. The newspaper industry is not used to running its business by numbers other than basic revenue, ad revenue, circ revenue, and profit. And what they've really got to look to is the new metrics. They've really got to understand the two drivers of their future business, and that's content and sales. And they don't have enough information right now about content. They don't understand the web ecosystem of how content gets monetized well enough, a sense really of value per content unit. They've got to understand that a lot better. And then importantly on the sales side, and that's still where most of the money is going to come from, the local marketplace is just being transformed by digital commerce. And they have, to their credit, newspaper publishers have made a major advance over the last 18 months, I'd say, large part due to the push of the Yahoo newspaper consortium. But they've got to move even faster because the local dollars are moving digital and there are more competitors for them. So they've got to continue to transform basically how they become more digital content and sales companies, and they've got to master those metrics and understand the drivers of the new business.
You know, we've seen quite a bit of interest lately in various schemes for micropayments, charging for content, subscriptions, that sort of thing. Have you seen any of these that you think are really going to work?
I don't think any of them are going to be transformational. I think that the primary purveyor of these options is really Journalism Online, which is headed up by Gordon Krovitz, formerly of Dow Jones and the Journal, and Stephen Brill. So they are pushing all kinds of models, and they're basically saying Journalism Online will give you 16 different ways to monetize your content. You'll be able to do micropayments, you'll be able to do subscriptions, timed access, all this kind of stuff. It's essentially a PayPal for newspapers. The problem with it is that there isn't a lot that local newspapers have to sell that is unique or proprietary or broad enough that many consumers are going to want to pay for it. So it, I think that the PayPal notion, PayPal for newspapers notion, is not a bad notion, but the problem is that what we have learned about content on the web is that if there is competitive good enough content out there, people will go to the competitive good enough content. The journal model, and this is where Gordon Krovitz comes from, works because it's deep content, much of it's proprietary, nobody else has it, and importantly, it's about money. And whenever people are investing, saving, spending, they're willing to spend some money if the information is going to improve their ability to do any of those. But if you look at what local newspapers do, they have generally broader information about what's going on locally, and they're not very deep in the key verticals that drive advertising online of finance and travel and health and those kinds of areas. So I think there's a disconnect between the tool set, which I think is a good tool set, and the consumer appetite for paying for content. The one area that I do think that I do look for next year to be tested by definitely some national publishers and maybe some major regional publishers is what I'd call an all-access pass. And this is the idea that, and you can see the Dow Jones is clearly working on this, New York Times is thinking about it, that we are now, as news consumers, used to getting news on laptops and desktops. We're used to getting it in print sometimes. We're used to getting it on smartphones. And now we're going to have a whole new generation of e-readers out there. So the all-access idea basically says, okay, if you want Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones content, or New York Times content, you can get it, and you can get it across all these platforms, and it's going to remember that you access these stories early in the morning. You don't need to see those again, or they'll be grayed out. If you save stories to read later, it'll know that. It'll keep it in one account as you move from one platform to another. And I think this parallels what we've learned about news and technology, that people are willing to pay, we're all willing to pay, you know, a substantial amount of money for broadband access, for ungodly amounts of money to AT&T to have data on the iPhone, but we're not really willing to pay for content. So the idea of all access is, okay, we'll make it more easier, essentially, to get to your content, to use your content, to share your content, and we'll charge you $5.99 or $9.99 a month to do that. That's not going to be, you know, a broad solution across most of their users, but if they could get 5% of their users to do that as an add-on charge, that's a great new revenue stream. So that's one thing I think we'll see.
So thinking 5 years down the road, do you think the average reader will be paying some sort of subscription fee to access their news?
To access online?
Yeah, online.
Yeah, online, I think not. I think that the direction really is going to go the other way, because if you look at it from a news landscape perspective, the amount of content, the number of newspaper stories that are being produced by newspaper companies are getting to be a smaller and smaller percentage of the pie. So you have instances, like I've just written about Twin Cities where I used to work, and there you have two competitive newspapers. You have the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press. You have MinPost, which is one of the best startup news sites out there. You have a brand new Minnesota public radio news site, which looks just like a newspaper site, has a lot of its own local reporting. You've got three television stations that are revitalizing their own websites and doing more text in addition to their video, just as starters and among other sites. So for newspaper companies, if you look at those newspaper companies, they're among those that have cut, say, 25 to 35% of their staff. They're producing fewer stories. If you are a Twin Cities news consumer, if a company says, we're going to cut off access, whether this year or 5 years from now, you say, well, where else can I get the news? And the truth is, you have more and more choices of getting news for free and good professional news in Twin Cities, not necessarily in all American cities, but in Twin Cities you're increasingly getting those options. You have those choices. So I don't think that news companies are going to be able to pull that off in metropolitan areas. You've got small cities, Schenectady this week, put up a lock on its website and basically did it in a way that I call a bunker strategy. Basically, you turn on the site, apparently, according to editor and publisher, and you found out that it was now a paid site. If you were a subscriber of the newspaper, you would get access. If not, you had to pay. There was no explanation. There was no sampling. That's kind of a bunker strategy. And in small cities, that will slow down circulation decrease a little, as we've seen in Little Rock, but it's not a strategy for embracing the future. So I think that readers are going to find that for the print paper, and that is largely a baby boomer habit, I call it a Starbucks buy at this point for comfort and convenience, they're paying more and more for that daily newspaper in print. But I think if these companies are going to have any future at all, it is going to be more online than in print. We see that huge generational preference for online. And consequently, I think that they're going to be free. Now, the All Access Pass is one idea on top of that. It's going to work for companies like the Times and the Journal because they have a lot of content. And they're really not charging for the news itself, but really for convenience and access.
You know, looking at the value of the online reader versus the print reader, I've seen estimates that the online reader is worth an online page view is worth as little as 1/80th of the value of a print subscriber. Do you see any way in which online advertising can support significant news organizations in the future?
Well, I think that, and those numbers are true, and it's interesting to look at those numbers. And you can say an 80th, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of estimates. Clearly, it is far less. It is a small percentage, whether it is, you know, 2% or 5% or 15% of print. At the same time, I look at these numbers and I say, the daily newspaper, for a 7-day subscriber, on average, a print reader, a subscriber to a daily newspaper, is going to spend more than 4 hours, maybe up to 5 hours per month with that newspaper. And that pencils out at a conservative 6-8 minutes a day, a little more on Sunday, and 30 days in the month. Well, that's a lot of time. That's where the revenue has come from still about 85% of the revenue of these newspaper companies is in print. You look at it online and you say for newspaper sites, the newspaper sites for local newspaper sites, it's about 6 to 12 minutes a month. So 6 to 12 minutes a month compared to 4 hours a month. So While I've heard and I've talked about these numbers that Paul, you're speaking about of the, you know, the minor percentage that online is, I can make a case that given the amount of attention that newspaper companies are getting online as opposed to we're getting in print, that actually their online revenue is high for the amount of attention they're getting. Now, it's a different medium. That said, it's a different medium. And I think if you look at online advertising, it's undeniable. You know, there will be $24 or $25 billion in online advertising just in the U.S. this year. Majority or almost the majority of that now is search. I think it's 46, 47%, and it's the fastest growing part. One of the big problems in newspaper companies is that they missed search. As silly as that sounds, they have thought it was a browse medium, and so they have been wholly dependent on Google and Yahoo for any search revenue. That's a huge problem. It's not that the money isn't there, it's that the other companies dominate that, and they're basically on the receiving end of a rev share of a rev share. So I think that the advertising model and the continued movement to online will happen. I think in part they've got to get savvier about how to get into the mainstream of of online advertising. And at the same time, I've called for a new deal with the search aggregators, and especially Google, and saying that there really should be a fair share, that Google getting all the benefit of using the headlines and the snippets from news companies simply isn't fair. It may meet fair use according to federal law. It's never been tested at the high courts. But it's not fair in that they are essentially monetizing headlines and snippets. And even though they're sending some traffic to newspaper sites, they're deriving huge benefits from the business that they built off of those headlines. So I think, in part, this is a reckoning of the whole news ecosystem that's just kind of developed, without plan. And so, in part, a reckoning with Google specifically, search aggregators overall, and then really understanding how you get more of the online advertising that is developing. At the same time, they'll be able to hold on to some print mass and print niche advertising for 10 to 15 years. So I think it's a hybrid model, and it's a hard model to work.
So are you suggesting that print publishers should initiate a class action suit against Google?
No, what I'm suggesting is, well, what's going on, I said that there's several different ways to look at it. On a legal basis, fair use has never been adjudicated at high levels. AP threatened, AFP in France threatened, others in Europe threatened, and all of them settled, and these are generally wire services, settled with Google. Google is paying them a license fee and getting more access to their content. But essentially, Google paid to keep the case from getting to a high court. The truth is, nobody knows what would happen, and everybody's too afraid to let it go to a court to see what would happen. My contention is the newspaper companies, by not taking it to court or successfully pressing it for a business advantage, have lost, because Google has built a $22 billion business in part, and clearly only in part, on currency, on news, and it's not compensating news providers at all for that. So, yes, a legal challenge could be the way to go. The better way to go is business, and this is actually happening right now, although it's not been publicized, where news companies are pressing Google on this fair share notion. They have said, it should work differently. Nobody ordained that it has to work the way it works right now. And Google is saying, well, we'll talk to you about it. Clearly, at the same time, we've got government antitrust action. The newspaper publishers, in fact, have been meeting with the new antitrust chief over the last month. So has labor in newspapers. And we know the antitrust division is looking very strongly at the Google Books deal. It's also going to be looking at Google and news, although there's no formal notification of that. So I'd say both on a business level, on an antitrust level, and perhaps on a legal level. But I think that pressure will help bring a better resolution there, and one that I would see as fair. Again, this doesn't, and it's not meant to revive newspapers or newspaper companies. It's meant to reward news for its place, and that could be news that is created by traditional newspaper companies or startups. But news should be rewarded.
You know, Ken, we're talking about some pretty radical reinvention here, and it occurs to me that the people who run these big news organizations, these big publishing operations, are not radical reinvention types, right? They've worked their way up through the ranks by being good operations people, by delivering consistent profitability, consistent return on investment, and now they're being asked to completely change the business model. And the question for you is, of all the executives that you've worked with over the years, what percentage would you say are really up to that task?
I would say it's a minority, clearly. And a number of people, there's been massive change in the industry already, and Paul, you used the word operations. For years, the newspaper industry, even about 4 years ago, and I did a report for Outsell, which included figuring out profit margin of public and private American newspaper companies, and it was 21%. It was 21.7% 4 years ago. So this is huge. I mean, it's huge numbers compared to many other industries. And I was in Knight Ridder for 21 years, and you could not get a better acknowledgement if you were a publisher in a company like Knight Ridder or Gannett or others than to be called a good operator. That's what you did. You were an operator. You knew how to move the levers, how much sales pressure would result in how much circulation, which would result in so much advertising. Everybody got their bonuses at the end of the year, and everybody was happy. So that was the culture. And the newspaper culture, and you can see even what people like Sam Zell, who come in from the outside, see, and I don't agree on much with Sam Zell, but he's right about the staid culture and staid operational really strategies of the old Tribune. That said, given that all the massive cost-cutting going on, newspapers have been more focused on cost-cutting than they have on reinventing themselves. And such areas as business development and marketing and corporate development and partner relations, which are just key to businesses all over the web, and anybody in the web business, these are just givens. These are still newer concepts to newspaper companies. And consequently, they are becoming, and it is sad for those of us who value what they do, they're becoming roadkill because they're simply not transforming themselves fast enough.
Kind of an odd question here maybe, but Erica Smith over at Paper Cuts has documented 14,000 layoffs, newspaper layoffs this year, about 10,000 last year. A lot of quality people on the street right now looking for work. And I guess the question is there a silver lining here? Do you see any benefit to having all of this talent out there looking to reinvent news gathering operations? And could we see more innovation because of it?
Some will. The question is how many? And I think the point you're raising is a really good one. And in a sense, you could say, well, it's supply and demand. If you go back to the end of the Civil War. Remember the history we read when they had all the soldiers who had nothing to do at the end of the Civil War. This is a common problem. I guess we had that problem in Iraq as well, right?
Yeah, and after World War II also.
And World War II, right? So now you have a lot of journalists. So where are they going to go? The problem, of course, is who is going to pay them, and that's where we are right now toward the end of 2009. There are a lot of people with really good skills out there who want to do the work. The public needs the work to happen because I figure something like 800,000 stories a year fewer are being written in newspapers, daily newspapers, in 2009 than 2005 because of these massive cuts that you noted. So I think what the issue is not that there isn't a supply, but how do you organize that supply and how do you pay for that supply? So yes, there are several sites in Denver and Seattle and others where there have actually been closures of former journalists. We're seeing more of those. Unfortunately, most of them don't have much business savvy. They have more passion, which is good, and I think that's a very important ingredient going forward. But they don't have the business savvy. We see organizations of laid-off journalists. We see startups, most of which are nonprofit on a local level. We see foundations really moving in to understand, like as they're looking at Chicago and they're saying, my God, there's two bankrupt papers in Chicago, literally in bankruptcy. What are we going to do to keep a high level of reporting about Chicago politics and business, which certainly needs it? So the foundations are talking about putting substantial amounts of money into new journalism organizations, the forms to be decided, over the next several years because of this huge vacuum. That could be made up certainly of some laid-off journalists, say, in Chicago. Hopefully it will involve greatly younger journalists who have the passion to tell stories, the multimedia skills. And what I have told these people as I've talked to them, I talked to a number of them recently, is that the same passion that they have for building new journalism, they've got to have passion for building new local businesses. They've got to get the people, and there's plenty of them out there, who want to help on the business side, on advertising, on how you use SEO smartly to build a local news operation, for instance. So all that is quite unformed as we go into 2010. And last point on that, it was interesting to see that Mark Potts formally announced Growth Spur, I think, last week, with a number of names behind it, including Jeff Jarvis and Jonathan Weber from New West, who I think very highly of in his site. So they're saying, okay, they said, well, maybe there's 200 sites out there locally, but they really need help in figuring out how they're going to move forward. And so I think it's smarter of them to see that there's all this ferment that is essentially unorganized, and then they've got to figure out how to move on it and how to connect it. It's not easy. Reminds me in some ways, I was involved in the alternative newspaper press 35 years ago at this point, of those early days of the alternative newspaper press. So I think we'll see a lot of it, but many of these organizations will just be much too small and won't work. I think the other thing we'll see true multimedia companies at the local level. They may be TV companies that absorb or grow text operations, essentially. They may be foundation funded. There's going to be a number of angels on a local level. A lot of ferment there, but the real question is, how do you build these to be substantial enough businesses, especially because the advertising economy won't support newsrooms of hundreds of people. It'll have to be a hybrid of some advertising, some angel funding, some foundation, some membership. And we see all those models in various forms now, but you can't point your finger and say, that's it, that's the model.
You know, following on what you just said, Ken, we've got these newspaper valuations at historic lows. The profitability is declining. We are seeing these publications are going to be picked up for pennies on the dollar in many cases. We've got journalists out there who are willing to work for dimes on the dollar. Is there the possibility that we are setting the groundwork for some real innovation here? In other words, now that we have had this scorched earth event where so much of the forest has been wiped away, do we have the stage set now for some real new growth and innovation?
There's a huge opportunity, and we shouldn't lose sight of that wider picture there that you're painting, Paul, because the wider picture is, if in fact this is the bottom of the deepest recession since the Depression, so now we have the ability to look up a little, and if it's a slow recovery, it's a slow recovery. If it's a fast recovery, it's a fast recovery. But when I talk to people like Scott Lewis, who's, I think Scott's about 32 years old, he's the head of Voice of San Diego in San Diego. He says they've got, I think, about 10 people now. And we talked about scale, and he said, I'm ready to have 100 people. I know what to do with 100 people now. And the level of journalism that they're doing and the passion they're bringing to it is exactly what the community needs and what the country needs. That passion, that upside, especially around readers, somewhat around business, is what's really going to fuel this news recovery. I don't think it's going to be a newspaper recovery. I think newspapers, by cutting as much as they have, and they've downsized dramatically, they've been able to get back to operational profitability. But at least half of them, the big public companies, have major debt problems. They're not going to be growing. They're not in a growth mode. The growth is happening all around them, and that's where the real interest is. That said, I think we're going to see some interesting relationships between companies that were formerly quote-unquote newspaper companies and public radio and startup sites, because the tools of this multimedia news age are truly remarkable. And as readers, we love them. We love being able to turn on video and time shift. We love being able to get, news from, the BBC, at the switch of a digital dial. So all that is good. We're just, I hope, at the bottom of kind of a news chasm, that 800,000 stories a year that we're lacking. It's not a problem nationally, I don't think. I think nationally we'll be fine. You see sites like Politico coming out of nowhere, and a number of them will join Politico. It is a problem locally and regionally, where we're finding out right now in 2009 far less about our communities. But I think that 2012, 2015 will have a new news ecosystem, And I think it will work pretty well. We've got to really just look at what are the deficiencies in it and what kind of supplemental funding to advertising it needs.
It sounds like you're pretty optimistic in general. You think that this is going to work out for the best, but we're coming out of just a very painful period here.
Well, we'll see the new growth. I love seeing the passion out there, but it worries me greatly, the loss reporting that we have. There was and it's hard to put your finger on, because when a story isn't written, it can't be read, and you don't know that it wasn't written. Brooke Gladstone on the media about beginning of the year when the Rocky Mountain News was closing, she interviewed Laura Frank, who was I'm not sure if Laura was a reporter or an editor there, I think an editor, and she said, so what stories were you working on that aren't going to see print? And she ticked off five or six stories. These were not investigative stories, but they were enterprise stories that would tell you all about schools. They would tell you about politics. They would tell you about health issues in Denver. And she said, do you think the Post will be carrying these stories? And she said, well, not that I know of. We didn't run across them on these stories. And she said, it is kind of sad because these stories now will never be read. And so those were just five or six stories, but that led me to kind of try to figure out how many stories haven't been written. And one of the basic reasons for the press, and we forget it sometimes, is it as a check on power. And when power isn't covered, and we can see the little problems of the last decade in the United States, when power is not covered well, it will make more and more of a mess. And it will, in part, the press, a turndown, really, of the last 5 years is partly, you can partly see the responsibility of that in the economic meltdown. You know, we have only a few media that have covered it, right? So I think we do have a big problem in the short term, although the solutions are right in front of us. And I would say, I mean, there's one solution. And the solution is to say, we need to find a way somehow in the Twin Cities to have, 400 people or so out there looking for the news and reporting it. We don't want to go below 400. And the foundations or somebody, and there's other things we didn't talk about of, internet taxes. There's the idea of BBC-like taxes or diverting part of internet access fees to fund news organizations. And, it's almost parallel to healthcare there. Some people would say, government funding journalism is not a good thing. Well, it has worked in Britain and Germany and France to help support an independent press since World War II. So there are other strategies that can work, and I am optimistic we'll figure it out. It just bothers me in the short term how much we're losing.